What's up, everybody? You're stepping into the rotation. This is George Cursor. I'm here with your humble narrators, Pat Ryder and Brian Jones. Good to see you guys last night in New York City. We'll be back at it again today. Brian, since we're in New York, it might be useful for us to talk a little bit about what's going on in New Jersey. I know that there was a big push to have legalization in some capacity ready early 2022. Obviously, today's March 1 and not a lot has happened. Can you just fill us in on what you know and what you're hearing?
Yeah. So, I know pretty much what everybody else knows, but to kind of summarize here, New Jersey's pretty extensive regulatory issues, hurdles that they're trying to get over. The governor's saying that recreational weed is going to be sold any day now, but there's a lot of groups coming out arguing about the disbursement of licenses, whether they were dispersed on a fair and equitable basis. And it's something we've talked about, as we talked about last week with Michael Diaz Rivera. You know, the inequities in the cannabis world are still there, and Jersey's finding that out. They're getting accusations of fraud, accusations of you know, not enough diversity in the licensee license disbursement. So, and then you just kind of, we've harped on it before, but you just kind of go back to, why does the Colorado model not work? Why does it have to be so regulated by the state to get this on the store shelves and get sold per the will of the people, right? That's really long and short of it. It's going to be an interesting topic to follow, because New York is kind of going through the same growing pains, right? The thing we talked about last week about the hemp farmers getting the ability to grow before licensees. So it's an interesting part of the country when you come through the cannabis world. We'll see if they kind of figure it out. I know I read one article that I know we all talked about. We posted about it on our LinkedIn page, the rotation. It's called The Progressive Problem Facing Legalized Marijuana. And really what it comes down to is, you know, if you had a D by your name, it's assumed that you want cannabis out there. The problem is if you have a D by your name, that also comes, and I mean Democrat, it also comes with, you know, mounting hills of regulation. And so there's a great article in the Nevada Independent that talked about how it's all well intentioned, but it's also, now that Republicans are getting behind it, it's becoming to the point where the people that wanted it are also strangling it. Patrick, what do you think?
You know, we're here in New York, and it was interesting. Last night we were out to dinner, and then we walked by MedMen, right? The MedMen shop right here in Midtown. And they're holding real estate. They've been holding real estate here for a while, and they continue to hold real estate because they know what's going to happen. And the excitement that's what's going to happen in these states, whether it be New York, New Jersey, and some other states in the Northeast. And I talked about this last week. That excitement is getting just waylaid by the frustration of dealing with, okay, how are we going to tax this? Who's going to get paid on taxes? What are we going to do to regulate this? What are we going to do with the money once we get it? Where is it going to go? And everybody's got their hand out. So the fact of the matter is, these states have passed legislation, and this is kind of where I'm going with it. And the state by state is taking a long time to get there. So those of us who are waiting on federal legalization to happen, we're out of our minds if we think that we're going to flip a switch and this is just going to happen overnight and we're going to have 420 parties across the country. We'll probably have 420 parties across the country. And if you take the Broadway, for example, here in New York, people are definitely just about it right now. But I just look at this and say, this is going to be protracted to the point where, you know, hopefully we're still talking about, what's going on in 5 years, because I really think it's going to take at least 4 or 5 years just to get these states up and running. Forget about at the federal level. It's just problematic. There's too many levels of bureaucracy. And we look at the California model, and it's funny because that's almost what's trending, right? You've got to have several different types of licenses. You got to have several different types of tax codes to get this thing up and at them, so to speak. And then you've got the municipalities, Brian, you touched on last week, that don't even want it. So I see this being long and drawn out with a lot of different talking points. And, you know, that's kind of where I sit on this. On the converse, the states that are up and going added over 420,000 jobs, right? We're over 420,000 jobs. We added 100,000 jobs in same store kind of capacity in the cannabis industry in 2021. That's a huge economic engine that's just waiting to explode if these guys would get out of the way and start saying, enough with the regulations. Let's get it going and let's react instead of trying to fix it before it even starts.
Yeah, it sounds like New Jersey style politics as usual. I mean, no surprise. I mean, history books are filled with corruption, special interest, kickbacks, etc. In the state of New Jersey, no surprise there. Speaking of politics, Brian, one thing that you and I have discussed, some folks may have not been paying attention. Unfortunately, sadly, there's some geopolitical events going on in Ukraine right now. But Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, who's giving his State of the Union address tonight, one of the focuses for him right now is nominating a new Supreme Court justice. I believe the front runner is Ketanji Brown Jackson. I believe is the front runner. And Brian, you and I were just talking about something that we read where there was, I'll let you explain it.
Sure.
Because it seemed like it wasn't really favorable to folks that were the victims of the war on drugs. And here we are talking typically about how we're supposed to change things and social equity and, you know, forgiveness of past sins. But the story we read was actually the opposite, where a specific individual who was caught selling, or, you know, the story was he was distributing marijuana in some capacity. Forgive me if I don't have all the details, but he was locked up with murderers, and murderers' stints in prison were shorter than his, which sounds crazy. And if this is the type of thinking that's going to be thought by a person who basically has the keys to the legal system for the rest of their natural life, it's kind of disturbing, isn't it?
You know, I think the thing that everyone needs to really focus on, and it's really hard for a lot of people, and you brought this story to my attention, so I thank you, is you got to stop looking at the D and the R in front of any politician or any judge or any nominee, because it really, we are bogged down by the system. The case you mentioned was a gentleman getting some hard time for 8 ounces of weed, I believe. And one of Biden's nominees, one of the picks in the nominee pool, had to sentence him to 12 years because that's how the system read, right? That's what the court had to do. I think everybody, if you're involved in this industry, take away the D and the R. I don't think you can look at what side they're at. I mean, you're going to sit to and talk to an Arkansas or an Oklahoma senator and assume because he has an R that he's not for legalization, but their states are building out at record pace, right? Oklahoma is truly the new Wild West of cannabis in terms of numbers of licensees. Anybody can get it. That's what I really took away, is you got to be very impartial with your own political views when it comes to cannabis, because it's not separated like so many other issues. This thing goes across the spectrum. I think the faster people realize that there are Republicans that support this industry, there are Democrats that don't, right? That both of those things are true. That's, you know, that was a really good thing that I learned you know, a couple of years ago, and it just keeps coming true per the article that we talked about. So, you know, it's going to be a tough slog for everybody. We have a lot of minds to change. And this is what we're trying to do here, right? You know, with what you were going to talk about today with Amy Larson at Tilt, I think she really hits on a lot of great points, and we can't wait to throw that interview out next.
Right. And we'll get to that in just a minute. I just want to, you know, just a little more to Brian's point is that if you have the ability, please follow us on LinkedIn. We're putting up a lot of interesting content, sharing a lot of the views and facts that we're finding from other folks that we're friends with in the community. Follow us on YouTube, hit the subscribe bell, and you'll never miss a show. And we have a great guest today. So Pat, I'll let you do a little intro, and then I'll see you guys in New York in a little while.
Yes, can't wait. It's great to be in New York around you fellas. So live and in person. But on our show today, we're going to have Amy Larson, who's the vice president of marketing for Tilt Holdings, which is a large publicly traded company in the cannabis space, kind of known for doing several different things. But we're really excited to have Amy on in particular because of her background and where she came from, you know, the inception of legalized marijuana sales in Colorado, doing tour guides, doing some canna tours here in Colorado, up through her time at a startup firm that works in the compliance industry, all the way to working, you know, for Tilt Holdings, which does a plethora of different things. And we're very happy to kick off our Women in Cannabis series, which we think is a really important thing to explore with Amy Larson, the Vice President of Marketing for Tilt Holdings. We welcome her into the rotation. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, good night, wherever this finds you. Welcome to your spot in the rotation. In the lower right-hand corner of your YouTube screen is my partner in this venture, Brian Jones, wearing his requisite Iowa Hawkeyes sweatshirt today. Brian, you down in North Carolina?
Yes, sir. Doing well.
All right. You know, as this podcast kind of kicks off, we are in the beginning stages. So there's a lot of firsts. And we're really excited today to kick off our Women in Cannabis series. And on the podcast today, we have the Vice President of Marketing with Tilt Holdings, Amy Larson, who is right here in Colorado. And we are fortunate enough to get a lot of folks from Colorado because they've been around. They know what they're talking about. And we just want to say hi to Amy. Amy?
Hi, Patrick. Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me on. It's great to be here. And so a little bit of my background, how I kind of got into the space. I've worked in PR and marketing for over 20 years. I actually spent a lot of time working in tourism, destinations, resorts, restaurants, and actually tourism, a cannabis tour company was actually my entree into the industry. And, you know, really kind of opened my eyes here in Colorado back in, you know, 2014, 2015, saw what the possibility was in the industry, kind of started doing my research and figured out we were told a lot of lies growing up, you know, when you grow up in the DARE generation and the, you know, Nancy Reagan tells you to just say no. So it was, I kind of committed my career to the cannabis industry in 2014, 2015, started the cannabis division of a marketing agency based here in Denver, ran that for a couple of years. I spent a couple of years at Simplifya, which is actually where Patrick and I met, kind of helped them rebrand, build their brand, you know, kind of pull them forward a little bit. And then I was fortunate enough to join Tilt June of 2021. So it's been a little over 8 months. And I just stepped in and took over the marketing department in the beginning of December. And I recently completed my term as the chair of the marketing committee for NCIA. That was a great organization. I was involved with them for about 4 years. And I also have served as a mentor for Canopy Boulder. So I like to give back through a lot of mentoring, especially on the marketing and PR side of things. So thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Glad to have you. The thing you touched on there slightly, you know, you talked about the DARE generation and you talked about misinformation that we were kind of told growing up. Why don't you, you know, I've obviously talked about my first issue, you know, exposure to cannabis, you know, the very first podcast that we had, kind of similar lines. So talk about that, what that means to you, what you mean there.
Sure. So when I joined this marketing agency, part of my charge was to discover just how deeply a traditional marketing agency should, you know, kind of get involved in the cannabis industry. And so it took a lot of research. I went to a lot of conferences. I started doing research on my own. I started, you know, kind of uncovering the truths behind the medicine of the plant. But really my kind of, you know, light bulb moment, as I like to call it, was I was actually at a conference in Phoenix. And I was listening to a panel of former NFL players, and that included Ricky Williams, Kyle Turley, a couple of other players who were talking about how, you know, cannabis was actually helped them heal, helped them, you know, with pain relief, all of those types of things that we know that the plant does. But their coaches and physicians and physical therapists, everyone pushed them to, oh, you need to relax. Hey, go have a drink with your friends. Oh, you're in pain. Here's another shot. Here's another prescription. Here's another this, here's another that. And nobody had any qualms about prescribing, you know, these players multitudes of, you know, prescription drugs. But when you think about cannabis and the actual healing effects of cannabis and how they could play better and they could play healthy and how, you know, we learned it was a neuroprotectant and all of those types of things. And it was shunned. And really for me, that was an, oh my God, we're such hypocrites. And we have been told that natural medicine is wrong. And that was really my light bulb moment. And that's when I dug in even further and started to look at home too. And, you know, the stigma around, you know, using cannabis, especially when you're literally a white suburban soccer mom. I live in the suburbs. My daughter plays competitive soccer. Using cannabis to sleep for pain relief, for anxiety, there's still such a huge stigma around it as a mom, as a parent. But it's okay for me to, you know, to say, oh, mommy needs to go have a couple margaritas, or, you know, it's time to go have wine with the girls. But when we talk about cannabis, it's still very hush hush. And I think working to, you know, at this point to start to help break down that stigma is a big part of my, you know, kind of my personal mission that I feel is really important.
It's great you say that, because, you know, I'm a big believer in it. I obviously grew up in a very alcohol centric path. I think a lot of people were, right?
Old Irish Catholics, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, last night I went to an Eric Church concert last night, and you know, I smelled it there. You know, it's everywhere. It's everywhere, and it's here to stay. So you have another interesting dichotomy within your family. I think that's something we should mention here. I think people would be interested to hear how that works for you guys.
Sure. So what Brian is referring to is that I'm actually married to a police officer. My husband's been in law enforcement basically since we met, almost 20 years. And it's an interesting place to be, I think, both from, you know, a law enforcement perspective, as well as, you know, a different perspective on the industry. I see both sides of the story, and I see, you know, I see the hate, and I see the misrepresentation from, you know, kind of going both ways, and the judgments that sit on both sides. And, you know, kind of breaking down that communication, I think if we just talked to each other a little bit more rather than read social media memes and, you know, forward on blurbs, our world would be a much happier place. But one of the when people ask, oh, my God, how do you do that? We do, because we're adults. And, you know, one of my favorite stories that my husband tells is, you know, it was probably January 1st of 2014, the first day of legal possession in Colorado. And he pulled someone over for who knows, some kind of a traffic stop. And they had a bag of weed in their possession, but it was within the legal limit. And he had to give it back to them because they were legally allowed to have it. And he said it was the weirdest day in his law enforcement career, was actually giving somebody their weed back. And, you know, we talk about it. I also have teenagers. I have a 16-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter. And I think, you know, we're very honest with our kids about what mom does, about cannabis, about why you can't use it any more than you can drink as a teenager. Like our kids are growing so much, but we don't lie to them about it. And mm-hmm. I think they get a much more well-rounded exposure, both, you know, especially to cannabis, because of what I do. And we talk to them like they're adults. And that's, I think, you know, we know that's what our kids can stand, you know, can handle. Every parent's different, every child's different. But I think if you lie to kids and make it, you know, completely taboo and don't even talk about it, you're only kind of driving that curiosity. Whereas we can be, you know, open about it and educate them so that they know why they shouldn't use it as kids until their brain fully develops. And so they know that, you know, it's not this horrible, it's not the devil's lettuce. It's not going to make you. I have the funniest ad I ever saw. And it's so bad. I have to think it was a spoof, but it was put out by the Ad Council. At least that's what the tag on the bottom says. And it was basically about some guy who tried marijuana for his first time at Thanksgiving and murdered his whole family. And I'm like,
that seems aggressive.
I don't think that's how cannabis
was it laced
works.
With PCP?
Yeah. Right? Or fentanyl these days? Like, yeah. You know. So anyway, so yeah, so I get to bring a fairly diverse point of view to, you know, to my job and to my personal life.
And let's hit on the job a little bit, because your career is pretty interesting, right? You've worked on the periphery of the cannabis industry, whether it's, you know, kind of transitioning, and it's kind of been a really interesting transition from the hospitality and the tour guides, right? That was kind of sitting on the outside. And then you went to a marketing firm, then to a technology firm, and not so much the evolution, because everybody picks their career path and does what they do. We want to kind of get in, you know, hear what it's like being a woman in a startup industry like this, because if you hear about all the misogyny and the bro culture that sits around tech, you actually sat at a tech firm for a little while. I don't think that was necessarily the case there, but certainly around that industry, you've been through it. So if you could tell us a little bit about your experiences just being a woman in this industry, from the startups into, you know, the monolith that is Tilt.
Yeah. So truthfully, it kind of doesn't matter what industry that you're in, being a woman, trying to be a leader in an organization is always a challenge. One of the things that has been, you know, kind of challenging and a little bit disappointing to see is, you know, when I started working in this industry, you know, 2014, 2015, you know, the cannabis industry was boasting about how many women sat in leadership positions, how many, the percentage of women that were CEOs, the percentage of women that sat around, you know, these the leadership positions within the industry. And it was above 30%. It was like 35 or 40%. Which is a huge number when you look at how female leadership makes up, you know, industries across the rest of the world. Unfortunately, as the industry has grown and it's expanded and we've, you know, brought in more, you know, investors and that kind of stuff, it's not to say that women aren't those investors as well, but as the industry has grown exponentially, that percentage of women in leadership positions has shrunk. And we're maybe neck and neck with what the traditional, you know, the rest of the world looks like when it comes to women in corporate leadership.
Amy, let me dig in a little bit there, because I think that's a great spot to see if cannabis has mirrored the rest of the country, right? So if you look at the numbers, in 2019 is when we stopped seeing some capital infusion into the cannabis markets. Right. Everything kind of dried up and people were said, okay, let's go make it. And so they had about a year, and then the pandemic hit. And when we saw the, you know, the great resignation, it disproportionately impacted women, specifically moms, from a removal from the workforce. Do you think that was a driving factor in a kind of mere traditional industry? Or do you think that there's a different driver in cannabis, which is kind of leading to the, you know, leveling out, so to speak?
I think it's a dual path. I think that you know, that absolutely plays a big part in the cannabis industry, but that plays a big part in all industries as well. The women holding leadership positions, it's a hard line to walk. And I'm sorry, you know, all respect to, you know, all those amazing dads out there, but being a working mom is a whole different world than being a working dad. It just is. You know, mom is still going to be making sure practices are done, lunches are made, you know, doctor's appointments are being gotten to. If somebody has to stay home from work, 9 times out of 10, mom has to stay home from work. So trying to find that balance of, you know, climbing the ladder, but being home for your kids, I think that pressure sits a lot harder on women, and we are hard on ourselves and we are judgmental towards each other. You can never, if you're a working mom, shame on you for going to work and not staying home with your kids. If you're a stay home mom, shame on you for, you know, not moving forward. You're just lazy staying home. And it's horrible that's what we do to ourselves, but it's a fact. And I feel like, you know, the pandemic, this, you know, this great resignation that happened, I know stories of, you know, women, you can't afford daycare. You basically are working to pay for daycare. And then when the pandemic hits, then daycares are closed and you can't take your kids to school. And if they're not vaccinated or somebody's exposed, and it's, it was tough all the way around. It was tough for moms, for dads, for teachers, for white, it was tough for everybody. But I think that led a lot of people to reevaluate. Some people had choices taken away from them, right?
Yeah.
They didn't have a choice, but to figure out how to survive. And I think for other people, they realized what was important. I think a lot of people now are like, oh, I can work from home. Why on earth would I go back to an office?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we learned to balance. I think there was a lot of things that learned, but to kind of come back to your question, Patrick, do I think that does the bro culture in cannabis exist? Oh my God, yes, it does, 100%. But that's, you know, I encourage, you know, women in this industry. There are women who want to be in this industry and women who want to kind of, you know, conquer and tackle that. We just have to be confident and we have to be strong. I'm going to walk into a room and you know what? My youngest sister is an award-winning ice water hash maker. I have no idea how to do what she does. I'm not even sure there are days I understand the science behind what she does to make that work. But on the other hand, I sit in a much different position than she does. Now, what she does is really cool to some people. What I do is really cool to other people. You know, marketing is not that cool, but you know, we're in cannabis, so we get to have a little bit of fun with it. But it's, you know, it's a balance. I think there's a place for everybody. And I think historically there's been assumptions, you know, that, you know, women should be marketing or brand ambassadors or bud tenders, but we are seeing this rise of women hash makers and cultivators and producers. And I think it's time for us to kind of be bold about claiming that. And I think that the stigma has weighed on a lot of women. And I think overcoming that, you know, we're getting stronger and being able to overcome that, stand up and proudly say, I'm a mom, I work, cannabis puts food on my table. Cannabis is the medicine that I use and I don't have any shame about it.
You know, it's interesting. Cause again, last night, like I said, it's kind of like these podcasts are my coming out of, you know, not really denying it anymore. Not saying, right, you know, what I do or don't do, you know, right. But it's still, it's just there's such a stigma. And I'd like to use our platform here to remove that stigma. That's why I love, you know, the broad depth of people we've had on, you know, mm-hmm, last week to this week, and just the different challenges people face, you know, and ours not the same. I get that, but it's still this, you know, will you be judged? And right, it happens everywhere, right? Yes. So, mm-hmm, you know, and then another thing you said earlier, and I had been thinking about this is a thing I came up with, you said people use it to sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think something about cannabis that people don't really know is I kind of compare it to a kinetic drug. Mm-hmm. If you want to use it, like if you want to smoke or if you want to do anything and you want to sit, you will continue to sit.
Right.
But if you want to use it and you want to go hit the gym and get a bunch of stuff all day, you will do that too.
Yep.
That is what I think is the beauty of it. So, and then I think the other thing that you hit on, and I really want to get at, is the kids and parents thing. You know, how you guys talk to them like adults. I know for many years, people are like, yeah, they have a beer or two. We don't make a big deal out of it. And most of the time that kind of works when you don't make a big deal out of it. So I think it was, we as parents have to just not lie and not make a big deal out of it. So,
right. But we also have to know
of course,
kids are in different places, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So some people might not be able to have that conversation, but know where your kids are and meet them, you know, kind of meet them there. And mm-hmm, to your point, Brian, though, it's not taboo. It's not something we can't talk about. Let's talk about what it really is, because as you guys know, until 80 years ago, it was every day, right? It was in all of our medicine. We've used cannabis for thousands of years for recreation, for religion, for health and medicine. And we just decided to get rid of it. That's obviously oversimplifying it, but it was gone. And then it was taboo. And it's strange how, you know, you start talking about big pharma and, you know, big oil companies and, you know, what was happening around that time too. And we all used all natural medicines for eons. And then all of a sudden using alternative natural medicines that we used for thousands of years became wacky. It's what the hippie down the road did, mm-hmm, you know? What happened in that conversation? It makes you wonder just how strong lobbying firms and the media and, you know, all these agendas that are out there pushing us away from what we've relied on as a human species for thousands of years.
I have never with our thought genetic about code too. So
I'd never right? thought about the fact that, you know, Big Pharma was actually alternative medicine, right? That's alternative right. wellness as opposed to the natural side of things. Brian, you started to get there. And I'm going to take it one step further. We're talking about how you're dealing with kids, how you're yep. dealing with your neighbors, how you're dealing kind of in your own ecosystem. I know that in my cul-de-sac, we are beer heavy, and people know whom I work with for a living, but I'm not in the industry. So when you're having people over for dinner, are yep. you now, you know, putting out gummies? Are you putting out drinks? Are you putting out Ripple? Is it kind of BYO? Do you see that in a social setting? Because I was at lunch the other day with my boss and he asked me if I wanted a drink. And I was just kind of like, nah, I really don't.
Yeah. It's so it's a little bit of a mix of both, Patrick. And again, the fact that, you know, my husband's in law enforcement, mm-hmm. he doesn't consume. So that, you know, he can't. And so that kind of limits that kind of community consumption. We still lean towards alcohol when we have friends and family over. Well, unless it's my family. And that's because, you know,
this ice water hash is getting busted out.
With two sisters working in weed, you have, you know, there's something there. But when we're talking about, you know, community and neighbors, you know, my kids' parents know what I do. It was really funny. It was maybe not last summer, maybe the summer before. One of my daughter's newer friends, I had just met her mom. I was talking to some of the other moms who were standing out front, and I was talking to her, and several of the moms knew what I did, but I hadn't really met her much. And so I kind of looked at her, and because she was kind of giving me this look, I said, I work in cannabis. And she goes, oh, so does my husband. And it was like this like relief that we could talk about it. Mm-hmm. And oh, that's, you know, hilarious. I mean, if you see, I wear this necklace. It's one I've had for years. I wear it almost daily. It has a kind of a stylized cannabis leaf on it. Took my daughter to the orthodontist the other day. The woman behind the counter is like, what's on your necklace? And I'm like, oh, it's a cannabis leaf. And she goes, oh. And I'm like, well, I said, you know, I work in the industry. And she's like, well, what do you do? I said, I work in marketing and communications and getting too deep into what a multi-state operator is. I've learned not to that. But she was like, oh, you must be busy. I'm like, oh, you have no idea.
But, that's hilarious.
You know, we just have to be out and not, you know, unless I'm going to a soccer game where I know there's going to be a whole bunch of underage kids, you know, I wear my shirts that say compliant AF, and I wear my, you know, mm-hmm. I've got a great shirt that says moms who smoke weed get shit done. And, you know, you get looks, but you more often get smiles and nods and like, oh my God, I love it. You get, it makes it okay for other people to talk about.
Yeah. What are you doing at Tilt? I think that was actually a perfect segue. So, you know, you're talking to the dental hygienist, you're talking to those folks, talk to us. What's going on at Tilt? Because there was a joke for a while that you guys just did everything, right? There's Blackbird Technologies, there's a wholesale distribution, there's retail en masse, they're yep. doing everything. And really,
we still do a little bit of everything, but we've made it work. And I'll, you know, I'll be honest. It was funny when, the recruiter for this position reached out to me and he's like, hey, there's this position at Tilt. And I'm like, are they still around? Because I remember when Tilt went public back in 2018 and it was, you know, it was Blackbird and Baker and, you know, C Hunter and like all these companies. And then you just didn't hear anything about Tilt anymore. And then I would say probably, you know, it was about 18 months ago, our current CEO, Gary, came on board and he really kind of turned things around. And so at Tilt is, you know, we have Jupiter, which is of course a vaporizer hardware company, one of the largest distributors of C-Cell. They're based in Phoenix. In Pennsylvania, we have cultivation, manufacturing, and distribution through our Standard Farms brand. Ohio is manufacturing and distribution. Hopefully we'll add cultivation, but Ohio is really stingy with their cultivation licenses. And then in Massachusetts, we have two co-located medical and adult use dispensaries, and we're getting ready to open our third dispensary in Cambridge, hopefully in Q2 this year. And then the other big exciting thing that we've been working on is this social equity partnership that we have with the Shinnecock Indian Tribe on Southampton. And that's really, it's really a great example of bringing social equity opportunity to, you know, a minority population that has been largely overlooked in the the social equity conversations. We think about, you know, Hispanics and Black people as being, you know, really the biggest targets of, you know, of the war on drugs and, you know, needing that restorative justice. But when we talk about social equity, Indigenous peoples and Indigenous tribes across the country have been like completely left out of this conversation. So what's really cool about this partnership that we're doing with them is basically TILT is coming in and we're fronting the build for the cultivation, the dispensary, a wellness lounge. We're, you know, bringing in training and bringing in the brand partners that we work with beyond just our partners and really working with the people of the tribe that then will maintain ownership of this operation, you know, in perpetuity. This isn't a loan and TILT maintains, you know, X amount of ownership of it. This is a, you know, we're investing and, you know, there's a, you know, loan repayment time, but then after that, if the Shinnecock want to take it and do their own thing, they have ownership of it all to, you know, to continue to move it forward. So really bringing that opportunity to then impact, you know, employment and economic opportunity, you know, throughout the entire region and, you know, specifically to this tribe. It's a really cool opportunity. And it's something that I'm really proud that, that we're involved in.
What's next for the cannabis industry? Where do you think, give us your opinion. I'd love to hear your opinion on where it sits federally and just all the hurdles that face the industry here in the US.
So, I mean, where do I think we're going to go? I think it's going to be a long time, unfortunately, before we see federal legalization. I think if we could get some building blocks out of the way, if we could get safe banking to pass, if we can get 280E out of the way, if we can get, and, you know, even, I know this won't happen, but even if we could get interstate transportation, if we could get, you know, but I'm saying it could, Patrick, but, you know, if we could even get banking and 280E taken care of, I think it would free up a lot of the restraints on the industry. Patrick knows, you know, as well as I do, and Brian, I'm sure you do too, you know, coming from the compliance side, I think people shouting for legalization have no idea how much more complicated that is going to make this industry. People have no idea. I mean, we joked when I was at Simplifya that cannabis was more highly regulated than plutonium. Mm-hmm. And it's only half a joke because when you think about local laws, state laws, local and state, and you add in testing and you add in packaging and you add in all, you know, the Department of Health. I mean, the FDA approved the hemp bill in 2018. Do we have regulations for that yet?
Nope.
No. So how is it, when in our lifetime is adding more government bureaucracy to a process made it easier?
You know, here's my issue with, you know, if we're going to do safe banking and if we're going to do 280E, I think that's foundational. I think that actually those two things help the industry create opportunity to actually build a foundation. Without it, you got too many people struggling and you've got too many issues with, you know, with just cash and some other things that are out there. And the insurance industry is not immune from that either. So the access to capital, the access to insurance, all that is 280. Interstate commerce, I think to a certain degree fucks everything up because that kind of skirts the federal issue, doesn't it? I mean, I think we'll go state by state, and states' rights, I think, is important to stand this up because it's going to prevent folks like Merck and you know, big pharma, big tobacco, those guys. I think it's going to prevent them from getting their hands on this and just turning it into something that the people that have worked so hard to get it this far don't want it to become.
Yeah. No, it does 100%. It just also highly limits a brand's ability to grow, right?
Yeah, but I do think there's some cool people doing some things on the entrepreneurial side and with licensing and some other things where we're going to start seeing national brands, right? We're going to start seeing that Coca-Cola, that Coors Light, Snickers, whatever. I think we're going to start seeing that here in the next 5 years.
for sure. That's my lens.
And that kind of process, that's a little bit what, that's one of Tilt's kind of growth strategies, is we work with brands that are established and then launch them into the market. So we help them expand. So like Her Highness, 1906, Old Pal, those are the types of brands that, you know, are up and running. And then we work with them, you know, through our license to process and manufacture and distribute their products. So that's how we are kind of, everybody's getting around the interstate issue, right?
Yep. And brands will win. I mean, I brands are going to win, but I love seeing the ability for these companies who are going up against the big cannabis. I'm not talking about Tilt size. I'm just saying when you're helping bring brands, you know, that's fun. I mean, that's what kind of piques interest in this industry is the assortment of things you can buy. A California dispensary has so much you can look at, hundreds of brands in there. I think that's what makes it great. Yeah. And that craft versus, you know,
corporate
that right. We need that. I think that keeps this very vibrant. So, right.
No, I agree.
Awesome.
Well, Amy, any last words from you?
I don't think so. I just, you know, it's such a fun, crazy place to be. I mean, I love working in this industry. And it's a new challenge every day, but it's also really exciting. The reason one of the reasons I kind of refocused my career to be in this industry is because I love the people. It's fun. I love the people in the industry. I love the product. And, you know, being able to be a little bit on the leading edge of this industry as it's being reborn, and breaking down the stigma that we've been, you know, that we've been taught for so long. So it's a fun place to be. It's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge, but it's a good challenge.
Thank you, Amy. You've been great.
Thank you
very much.
Hey everybody, hope you enjoyed that conversation with Amy. I know in my personal journey here in the cannabis industry, she's actually ahead of me, right? She's out there speaking the truth. I really appreciated her commentary on being Canna Mom, talking about the difficulties women face in this industry, which is what they faced in a lot of industries, but we're trying to make cannabis better. So I hope her words ring true and really get out there to the world about what needs to happen for women in the cannabis industry. We're going to keep going. We got some more great guests lined up. I hope that you're enjoying the content. Again, like, subscribe on your favorite platforms. And, you know, as a tradition here on the in the rotation, last week, they sold 82,000 ounces of smokable flower in Florida. Still under 700,000 patients, but that's 10,000 more ounces than our normal average. So just want to throw that out. And I hope you guys enjoyed what you heard today. And we'll see you next time in the rotation. George, grab the citrus spray.